You know, it's pretty amazing when you stop and think about it. This little rectangle in your pocket connects you to, well, basically everything and everyone.
It really does feel like magic sometimes, doesn't it? But there's so much complex stuff happening under the hood, so to speak.
Exactly. And that's what we're diving into today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're digging into information and communications technology, ICT, basically how our digital world works.
We'll be covering quite a bit from the way our phones actually connect to, how ideas get protected online, and unfortunately, the darker side, like cybercrime.
Yeah, lots to unpack. And our guide for this is a really comprehensive source from TeachBook.in called ICT, Trends, Mobile Tech Rights, and Cybercrime.
Looks like a solid foundation for our discussion.
Absolutely. So our mission today, to pull out the key insights, the really important stuff from this material, and give you a clear picture of this digital landscape. Hopefully you'll have a few aha moments along the way.
Let's do it. Where should we start? The phones themselves.
Yeah, let's start right there. Mobile communication. We always hear about generations, 1G, 2G, now 5G. What does that actually mean?
Well, each G is essentially a major step up in the technology used for wireless communication. Think of it like chapters in the story of mobile connectivity.
Okay, so chapter one, 1G. That was
Yeah.
just basic voice calls, right? Analog signals.
Pretty much just talking. Then 2G was a huge leap. It went digital.
Ah, right. And that brought in technologies like GSM and CDMA.
Exactly. Global System for Mobile Communications and Code Division Multiple Access. This wasn't just clearer calls, it enabled stuff like basic text messaging, SMS, using those little SIM cards.
GEM cards, yeah. Suddenly your identity wasn't just tied to the phone itself.
Yeah.
Okay, then 3G.
3G is where mobile data really started to become usable. Faster speeds meant you could actually, browse the web somewhat decently, send pictures, maybe even short video clips. Transferring larger chunks of data became feasible.
Right, that's when the mobile internet sort of started feeling real. And 4G, that's LTE, long-term evolution.
Yeah, and 4G was another massive jump. High quality, high speed, high capacity. This is what really enabled the smooth video streaming, the app stores, the social media sharing we take for granted now.
Made everything instant, practically.
Yeah.
So now we're rolling out 5G. What's the promise there? Even faster downloads.
Faster speeds, yes, but also much lower latency, less delay, and the ability to connect way more devices simultaneously. It's seen as key for things beyond just phones, like the Internet of Things, smart cities, maybe even remote surgery someday.
Wow. It's kind of crazy how fast that's all happened.
It really is. And it's not just about speed, it's about fundamentally changing what's possible. We went from just voice to text to multimedia to this rich, data-heavy experience. Think about how much you stream or download now compared to even 10 years
Oh,
ago.
totally different world. Okay, so beyond the G's, let's talk about some specific services we rely on, like SMS, the short message service.
Right, the humble text message, up to 160 characters, still incredibly widely used.
And the source mentions it runs on this protocol called Signaling System Other 7, SS7.
Yeah, SS7, it's actually the underlying system that helps set up phone calls all over the world. SMS kind of piggybacked on it.
Interesting. Is that still secure, an older system like that?
Well, that's a really important point. SS7 has known vulnerabilities precisely because it's older and wasn't designed with modern internet-style security in mind. People have exploited it to intercept messages, track locations. It's a reminder that even basic services rely on complex, sometimes aging infrastructure.
Yikes. Okay, something to keep in mind. Then there's MMS, Multimedia Messaging Service.
Right, the upgrade to SMS allows you to send pictures, short audio, video clips, more data rich.
And GPS, Global Positioning System. Hard to imagine life without it now.
Absolutely. Satellite-based navigation, it's everywhere. In our maps, our ride-sharing apps, fitness trackers, completely pervasive.
And one more thing the source mentions, smart cards.
Ah, yes. Those little plastic cards with a computer chip embedded in them.
Like our SIM cards, right?
Yeah.
And ATM cards.
Exactly. They store and process data securely. Well, relatively securely. They're a key piece of the puzzle for identity and transactions on mobile and elsewhere. You interact with them constantly.
So true. Okay, so we have the networks, the services, but what actually runs our phones? The operating system, the mobile OS.
Right, the brain of the operation. It's the software that manages the hardware, the screen, the processor, the memory, and lets all your apps run. It's the interface between you and the machine.
And we know the big names, Apple's iOS, Google's Android. The source also mentions BlackBerry OS and Windows Phone.
Yeah, ghosts of mobile past to some extent, though BlackBerry still has its niche.
And it mentions Android uses a Linux kernel. What's the significance of that?
That's actually a key differentiator. Linux is open source, meaning its core code isn't locked down by one company like, say, iOS is by Apple. This openness allowed many different manufacturers to adopt and adapt Android, leading to its huge market share across countless devices. It fostered competition and variety. Apple took the opposite path, tightly controlling both hardware and software. Different philosophies.
Gotcha. So regardless of the OS, they all do similar core jobs.
Fundamentally, yes. They manage files where your photos and apps are stored. They manage memory, making sure apps have the resources they need. They manage processes, juggling all the tasks the phone is doing. And of course, they provide the user interface, the icons, the menus, how you interact with it all.
Makes sense. Without that, it's just a brick.
Pretty much. A very expensive brick.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit. All this technology, all these apps and services, there's a lot of creativity and invention involved. How is that protected? This brings us to IPR, intellectual property rights.
Right. Legal tools to protect creations of the mind, giving creators some control over how their work is used.
The source breaks it down. One big category is industrial property. That includes things like patents.
Yes. Patents give inventors exclusive rights to their invention for a set period, like a new type of battery technology or a specific software process. It encourages people to invent, knowing they can benefit from their work.
Okay. And trademarks, that's like logos and brand names.
Exactly. A name, symbol, logo, even a specific sound or color that identifies a product or service and distinguishes it from competitors. Think of the Nike swoosh or the McDonald's golden arches.
The source gives some interesting specific examples too, like industrial design, the look and feel of a product, the Coca-Cola bottle design, that's protected.
Yep. The unique shape itself is a form of trademark, technically a trade dress protected under industrial design rights. It's instantly recognizable.
Huh. And geographical indications, like where something comes from.
Precisely. Tags for products that have a specific quality or reputation due to being made in a particular region. The source mentions Kozakodan halwa. Think champagne from France or Parmesan cheese from Italy. It protects the authenticity and reputation linked to that place.
That's fascinating. So these aren't just legal terms. They actually impact competition and consumer trust.
Absolutely. Patents drive innovation, trademarks build brands and help consumers identify quality, geographical indications protect regional economies and heritage. But there's always a debate, you know, how long should a patent last? Does trademark law sometimes stifle competition? It's a balancing act.
A tricky balance, I imagine.
Yeah.
And the other big part of IPR is copyright, right?
Yeah.
For creative works.
Yes. Copyright protects original works of authorship books, music, paintings, software code, movies. It gives the creator rights over reproduction, distribution, adaptation, and performance of the work.
Okay. That covers a lot of the digital content we consume. Now, let's venture into the environment where all this happens. Cyberspace.
The virtual world created by all these interconnected computers and networks. The internet, basically.
And where there's a new frontier, there are often dangers, which leads us to cybercrime.
Yeah, criminal activity that uses computers, phones, the internet as either the tool or the target. And it's incredibly broad.
The source lists several categories.
Yeah.
First, crimes against individuals. Things like identity theft, stealing passwords, usernames.
A huge one. And harassment, posting nasty comments, online bullying. Impersonation, too, creating fake profiles to trick people.
Violation of privacy, sharing personal photos or data without consent. And distributing obscene material online.
Mm.
Seems like a lot falls under this category.
It does. These directly target people's personal security, reputation, and privacy.
Then there are crimes against property, like credit card fraud.
Classic example. Also, intellectual property theft, stealing trade secrets or copyrighted material, often on a larger scale than just individual piracy.
The source also mentioned internet time theft. What's that? Sounds old school.
It is a bit dated now. Back in the dial-up days, people had limited prepaid internet access. Time theft was illegally using someone else's connection or account to get online without paying. Shows how cybercrime adapts to the tech of the time.
Huh. Okay, didn't know that was a thing. And finally, crimes against government.
Yes. Things like cyber terrorism, using cyber attacks to cause disruption or panic, defacing government websites, attacking e-governance portals to steal data or disrupt services. These target public infrastructure and national security.
It's quite a list. Really highlights how vulnerable we are, both personally and collectively.
And it's constantly evolving. Criminals are always finding new ways to exploit technology. Phishing scams get more sophisticated. Ransomware attacks target critical infrastructure. Awareness is key.
So when these crimes happen, how do investigators figure out who did it? That's where cyber forensics comes in.
Exactly. It's a specialized field that blends law and computer science. The goal is to carefully collect, preserve, and analyze digital evidence from computers, phones, networks, servers.
In a way that holds up in court, right?
That's the crucial part, admissible evidence. They need to follow strict procedures to maintain the integrity of the data, proving it hasn't been tampered with. It's like digital detective work, finding the electronic fingerprints and footprints.
Must be incredibly challenging trying to trace actions across potentially global networks.
Immensely challenging. It's a constant battle to stay ahead of the criminals' techniques and ensure justice can be served in the digital realm.
Okay, one last concept from the source, and it's something I think many of us might feel. Infomania.
Yes. That feeling of being completely overwhelmed and exhausted by too much information.
Right. The constant notifications, the endless scrolling, the pressure to stay updated on everything.
Yeah.
Have you ever just felt your brain shut down from the sheer volume?
Oh, absolutely. It's a recognized phenomenon. Our brains aren't really wired for this relentless fire hose of data. It can lead to fatigue, difficulty concentrating, anxiety. It's the downside of being hyperconnected.
Yeah, definitely something to be mindful of in our daily digital lives.
Understanding it is the first step towards maybe managing it better, setting boundaries, being more intentional about information consumption.
Good advice. So we've covered a huge amount today, from the G's of mobile evolution and the services we use daily,
to the operating systems making it all work and the IPR trying to protect the innovation behind it.
And then into the challenges of cyberspace, the threats of cybercrime, the work of cyber forensics, and even the mental load of infomania. It's quite the ecosystem.
It really is a complex web, touching almost every aspect of modern life.
So here's a thought to leave you with. As this digital world keeps accelerating, we're talking 5G now, AI is booming, new cyber threats pop up constantly. How do you think we as individuals and as a society can best prepare ourselves, not just to cope, but to actually thrive in this incredibly complex, information-heavy future?
That's the big question, isn't it? Something definitely worth pondering.